From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney.
Well, Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics joins us in the studio. In his orthopedic practice, in addition to the traditional approaches to joint repair, Dr. Davidson specializes in keeping you strong at every stage of life with things like regenerative treatments and stem cell therapy. Dr. Davidson is well known for his cutting-edge techniques in things like cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing of the knee and shoulder. It's nice to have you back with us, Dr. Davidson. Good morning.
Well, thanks for having me, and good morning to you and to you as well, Tim.
And full disclosure, we ought to mention that you underwrite our show, so thank you for that. And let's just get into it. It seems like there is just a bigger offering of things under the umbrella of regenerative techniques. We hear a lot about stem cell therapy, and we have over the last couple of years. But now other things, bioactive therapies and other catchphrases and names of treatments that you're doing that enter into the conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's well put. You've done your homework in advance. I think the name or the label of stem cell therapy, we as a scientific community, people devoted to the field have kind of moved past that. So that more it's bioactive therapies, regenerative therapies, orthobiologics. The idea is to incorporate biology, cellular biology, chemistry, and our knowledge of nanoproteins and all these advancing scientific principles into our joints and our musculoskeletal tissues. And it's very exciting. It's a fast-moving field. Orthopedic surgery itself has seen advancements, but this particular field, there's so much interest, there's so much science at play that to me, intellectually, both in terms of this being a stimulating intellectual exercise as well as the exciting ability to present this to patients, to offer individualized treatments, non-surgical or as an adjuvant to surgery, it's just a very exciting time.
Yeah. So the word bioactive suggests to me that something that you inject will create a response in the body, in your own tissue or your own joint, that will regenerate. So it's more of a preventative or proactive treatment.
Let me tease that out a bit. So the treatments that we're doing, these bioactive treatments, meaning that they're biologically changing the milieu or the environment within the local area, we have different goals. It's based on the individual patient. If someone's had an acute injury, it's different than if someone has, for example, recurring swelling of their knee, or if they have no swelling, but it just their knee creaks. These are three very different scenarios, and we approach them differently, whether it's to provide long-standing lubrication and decreased swelling, or whether it's to actually regrow healthy tissues, the goals differ. It's not sort of a one-stop all-comers because we as people are unique and our situations and our goals are unique. The treatments reflect that.
How long before, and I'm thrilled to hear you say you're drawn intellectually to the concept of what is happening, because if you compare offering your patients with the surgeon's scalpel, which was standard, it still is to some degree a standard, but certainly 10 years ago and 20 years ago, that was your only option, and to now have these other options. But that leads me to wondering how long before it's just the needle that you're presenting and you're presenting these alternative options to the scalpel. Are we headed someday to that, or is there always going to be the need for acute action with surgery?
Well, I think that the need for surgery in the context of acute injury, for example, a broken ankle, we're not going to use injection therapies to fix or correct a broken ankle. But what we are beginning to see is that utilizing and optimizing these therapies and the biology within joints looks like it's going to very substantially postpone the need for certain reconstructive surgeries where our parts are wearing out. So, for example, one of the tests that we're now administering, we're looking for degradative proteases. That's kind of a mouthful. Basically, these are bad enzymes within the joint. And we can identify these with using a simple assay. So we draw some fluid from the knee, run a test in a laboratory, not local here, but afar, and we can determine if, in fact, the individual person's joint has these, again, using a common term, a bad enzyme, negative proteins. And if so, then we can take that person's own blood, isolate certain cells. We get into scientific terminology quite quickly, but alpha-2 macroglobulins live in all our bloodstreams. And we can concentrate those, and they actually bind and inactivate these negative proteins. So you're essentially changing the biology of getting rid of the breakdown proteins, the negative proteins in someone's joint. And that would be, that's a brand new therapy. You know, that's a 2019 therapy that's just being implemented. And if you can change the environment from a breakdown environment to a neutral or a healthy environment, that person's not going to need a knee replacement in the future, at least in theory.
So that therapy of 2019, when did people start talking about that? And were they considered kind of fringe lunatics when they were talking about the therapies that are now being implemented? And kind of in conjunction with that, are there therapies that are being talked about today that are viewed as fringe and lunatic that you could project out 15 years and go, you know, I look forward to 15 years from now when I might be doing this?
Well, I think the notion of fringe and lunatic, I'm going to move away from and say that. So in this community of scientific regenerative medicine, it's driven by the science. It's driven by PhD scientists in labs collaborating with clinicians, persons that are doing stuff like me. And you take a theory, for example, this theory, we call it A2M, which is this molecule in our blood. This theory that, well, if A2M can bind these negative proteases or bad proteins, maybe it's useful in injections, and then that's tested. And once it's tested and shown to have some efficacy, then it can be introduced according to FDA regulations here in this country. So there's a process, but that's the scientific process. We have a big challenge here in this country, not just in our community, but in most communities in the country, where practitioners are just kind of throwing regenerative medicine at the community without specificity, without unique attention to each person. Kind of, we have one offering, this is what we sell, this is what we do in every situation. And as a scientific community, that challenges us because it's tarnishing the reputation of regenerative medicine. If clinics are kind of randomly offering these treatments, more patients come into my office, Tim, and ask for, quote, stem cell therapy. And I say, look, you know, that may not be appropriate in this case. First of all, it's expensive. We want to use it wisely. And then I might say, well, look, you have a mechanical problem in your shoulder or your knee, and then we have to address this mechanical problem, and you shouldn't have stem cell therapy. So there's a combination of high scientific principle with high ethical principles, and that's when it's a winner for the community.
I have to apologize to all those PhDs and researchers out there for calling them fringe and lunatic, but I get your point. I mean, and it sounds like things are happening really rapidly, kind of on parallel tracks.
The protocols that we're using and the recommended treatments and the techniques and the things we're using changing yearly. That's what I mean. It's very exciting intellectually.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, based in Park City at the New Park Town Center and also Salt Lake City at the Old Mill Medical Center. And Dr. Davidson, you know, you talk about these bad agents, bad enzymes in the knee that you can take out, you can study, then you can figure out what to put back in. And what it says to me, you know, it's all very complex but exciting, because what it says to me is that we get to this point in our lives that if our knees start to creak and get inflamed, generally we say, oh, yes, my parts are wearing out and I guess I'll just kind of stop running or whatever it is. And what you're saying makes me think that we don't have to accept that anymore. Is that true?
I guess it's not a yes or no answer. So what happens is, let's take knees, for example. People come in, and you and I are the similar vintage, and we have a few miles under the belt.
I like that.
But so your knee is sore from running, let's just say hypothetically, and it's not like, oh, you're sore, you get this treatment. We look at the structure of the knee. What's the structure like? We look at, is your knee swollen? Because a swollen knee, we can decrease inflammation and get people feeling better. is the knee not swollen or what we call dry, then we might, for example, lubricate it. So there's really, in each individual case, it's not like, oh, sore knee, boom, we do this. It's more like, let's figure out about this individual person, unique to that person. What are you trying to do? You know, if you're trying to, you know, run ultra marathons, maybe that's not in the cards, but perhaps some, you know, 10Ks are. So we establish goals together, and the treatment is always patient-specific.
I'm down to 5Ks.
Well, yeah, that, you know, the tomorrow is the 4th of July, and there's the 4th of July 5K. That's such a great event here in Park City. And a friend said to me, are you doing the 5K? And I said, no, I couldn't even run a 5K.
I have some 10-year-olds to beat.
Yeah. But she said, well, I'm walking the 5K. And I thought, of course, that's what I should do. I'm not into running. But and so, again, it's, you know, it's just looking at what you have and what you can do with what you have, which is a beautiful thing. So back to some of the things that you've been doing in your practice for a long time, which is cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing. Cartilage restoration, as you've just described, looks different now than it used to. How so?
Yeah, I guess an example is that we're now incorporating in some of the cartilage surgeries stem cell therapy. So if someone's getting a cartilage graft, we might add stem cells from their own body. These are generally younger people. They have a relatively larger number of stem cells. And we might add stem cells to the cartilage grafts, enhancing it. So we've been doing cartilage grafts for many years, but now we can incorporate some of this technology where we can obtain and subsequently filter concentrating the stem cells by growing them, but concentrating them by filtering them and using it with cartilage grafts. So some of the technology is directly applicable and being used to enhance the cartilage surgeries.
Lynn, you know how I like to wait for the technology to catch up to me. And I just heard Dr. Phil talk about, you know, as our parts wear out, we have a way to help regenerate them, which thrills me because I have all these friends who have had knees replaced, and it seemed like it was almost the thing to do. I hate to call it a fad, but so many people were getting knee replacements at a certain age, and they were all active people, and I got it. You know, they want to continue to be active. But when I saw what they went through in their recovery, and when I heard about what that entails, what a knee replacement entails, in the back of my mind, I can't help but be absolutely horrified that I might have to do some, or might choose to do, you know, have to, choose to. That's a tough one with a knee replacement, I think. But now I hear you saying that I can get my knee restored through an injection if it fits certain criteria. And boy, that sounds a lot better than the knee replacement process that I've seen.
Well, I think that, look, let me be clear, there's millions of people in the United States with knee replacements. It's a very common and popular procedure because people, while it may be a difficult few weeks, they do, for the most part, quite well after the surgery.
And they all say that. They all talk about how they're so thrilled that they did it and how they feel now. And I just, it's kind of amazing.
I think of it, these regenerative technologies and techniques, I think of it as prolonging that. There's certain people that are genetically predisposed. I mean, we all know people that have arthritis in the family and worn out joints. Once a joint's fully worn out, so to speak, a knee replacement's a great option. But there are many people that have arthritis in just a limited part of the knee, or they have early arthritis, and they're the ones that are going to benefit from these types of therapies. So I'm not an opponent to knee replacement. I do knee replacements. It's appropriate under the right circumstance. The idea is to offer a customized treatment to people throughout their life, whether they be a youngster or a retiree. The idea is to provide exactly what's best for that person at different stages of life.
So you, as a practitioner and clinician who's implementing these new therapies that are being developed, and you also have the benefit of history of having seen 10 years ago when the norm and a lot of people were having their knees replaced, and now looking at these other options and therapies that you're on the ground implementing, what's happening with your practice? Are you seeing people recognizing that there is a different approach, or is there still hesitancy and skepticism amongst the population that this would be appropriate for?
Yeah, and I think I have seen in my practice over the past 15 years a real progression. And so maybe a scenario would be illustrative. So treating a particular patient of mine is a 61-year-old guy. His knee's been sore and clicky and misbehaving.
Is it me?
I wasn't picking on you, Tim. This is a taller guy. So anyway, the point is his knee's been clicky, sore, and really bothers him for a long time. And the clicking was related to a meniscal fragment in the knee, so we scoped his knee. And with the arthroscopy, the clicking's better, but he's still having the aching. And so now, in the past, the only thing we could do for that aching is maybe put some steroids in there, which diminishes inflammation. And now, in his particular case, we're going to administer PRP, which is platelets combining with hyaluronic acid, which is essentially a constituent of the joint and a lubricant. And I think that he'll do much better than he would have 15 years ago when the same, you know, with just having surgery and not the biologic treatment. So many of these orthobiologic treatments or bioactive treatments are, I think of it as an adjuvant. They're not all of them standalone treatments. Some of them we might use bracing in conjunction with injections or physical therapy or surgery. It's not like just squirt in some magic potion and call it good.
Mm. It's a lot for you to have to tackle as a physician. You got to really expand the breadth of what you do. But I tend to think that's exciting for you.
It is. I mean, that's one of the reasons a good reason to become a doctor is enjoying study, enjoying learning new things, enjoying incorporating technology and data. That's one of the joys of being a physician.
Healthcare is very expensive. Even when you have great insurance, it's often very expensive. And so I know that a lot of things like stem cell therapy are not yet covered by insurance. But are, you know, all these things that you're talking about, the platelet-rich, you know, the hyaluronic acid, the injections, the bioactive, which of those, if any, are covered by insurance at this point?
Some insurances. So in terms of the insurance companies are vested in waiting on paying for treatments, right? They're for-profit entities for the most part, and they don't want to offer expensive therapies until, it meets certain criteria and they're, quote, proven. So they're waiting, and they'll wait as long as possible, but there's now compelling data. For example, tendonitis of the knee and tendonitis of the elbow have at this point been very well studied, and it's shown, for example, that platelet-rich plasma, which is an extract of our blood, is more effective in treating that than steroids. And that data is what we call level one data, meaning the highest rigor of study. And so it's beginning to reach what I think is going to be a tipping point where some of these therapies, particularly the PRP first, will be covered by some insurances. But to date, it's not. The insurance companies will tell their patients or their subscribers that, oh, we can do an appeal, you can consider this. But practically speaking, it's not presently covered. I do think it will be coming, and those therapies in certain circumstances that prove efficacious will be covered, but not in the immediate future.
Dr. Phil Davidson is our guest of Davidson Orthopedics. Always great to have you back in the studio with us. Dr. Davidson practices in Park City and in Salt Lake, and you also have, and I'm saying this because it's a big holiday week here in Park City, you see a lot of out-of-town patients, and that's something that you are open to and is part of your practice. Is that right?
Yeah, and here in our community, we have a lot of part-time residents as well as visitors, and we do, we've actually now incorporated a telemedicine, which is really exciting because many of my patients come from far away to see me, and now we're doing follow-up visits in a formalized, HIPAA-compliant way. So telemedicine has become part of our practice. Just in 2019, we formally incorporated it.
I'm picturing lifting up my knee on this Skype conference we're having, and look, Dr. Davidson,
you
see my
we're
knee?
We're really doing that. It's begun. I mean,
see how it's swollen right here? Okay. Well, great. I'm buying it. Dr. Davidson, thanks so much for joining us, and have a happy 4th.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows, Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.